It's time for To The Last Drop podcast with Liam Del Calm and Brendan Nell.
We're back. It's episode 8 of To The Last Drop. Brendan Nell here and Liam Del Calm with me. And a big week for the Box. Their friendliest game against the All Blacks coming up. And the surprise in the center. Interesting choice of team there.
It is. They told us weeks ago that they would edge towards what is the best 23. And what we've seen now is that they are edging close to the 23, but they still throw in one or two little curveballs. And in, I suppose, also a little bit understandable in that a guy like Caden Moody, who's done so well on the right wing, he's grabbed, he seized these opportunities. But just to have a look at him in a different position, there has been a lot of talk of him potentially playing 13, and now he's been given that responsibility in a very, very big test. When I say very, very big test, it is the All Blacks. There's nothing much riding on it apart from it being a test against the All Blacks, but still a big challenge, no doubt, and a very interesting selection, as you noted.
Yeah, and look, I know the Bulls have been talking about playing him at 13 for quite a while now, so obviously that's also got through to the Box. But I sort of wondered to myself this week when they made the selection that would they have done this if he hadn't had two Man of the Match performances in a row? And maybe that sort of tipped the selection a bit, that they felt, well, he's in such good form, now is the chance to try it rather than do it later on.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to weigh up keeping the winning team and sort of keeping momentum and still weighing it up against still making a couple of changes and just having a look at a player in a different position and see him in a different light and how he responds in a different position. And I think it's brave, there's no doubt, but what Caden Moody has shown so far is that he can rise to the challenge. So I think there'll be a lot of eyes on him, especially if the All Blacks come up with Rico Iwani in the opposite jersey.
Yeah. Oh, Rico is the one guy who also made his debut at 19 and has grown into that role as well. And there's a lot of doubts in him in New Zealand, as there tends to be when a new player comes in. Somewhat unwarranted at times, but he's grown into that. And Caden's definitely shown enough maturity to warrant that sort of confidence in him. It's interesting, but what I found quite interesting, I mean, we could probably have expected at some point in this sort of lead-up to the World Cup for them to do that. But pairing him with Andre Esterhazy is an interesting one, especially because, they're both quite, I mean, Caden's not the bulkiest guy, but he's tall. So it's an interesting centre combination.
It is. It also smacks a bit of you've got a sort of a combination there that feeds into what the Box did so well at the last World Cup, and it's the way they swarm, the opposing attack. Caden Moody does make fantastic reads, defensive reads, and because he's gangly and he's got like these octopus arms and legs, he kind of gets in the way and he makes a proper nuisance of himself. And as I said, he reads the game very well. So. It is an interesting combo, there's no doubt, but I think it's one that can work. I mean, it's one that can certainly at least try and suffocate what New Zealand have to offer in midfield.
Yeah, and I think we're probably looking at as well, which they won't say, but I mean, if Esterhazy puts in a couple of big hits, they're hoping maybe a spilt ball there and Caden picks it up sort of pressurizes the defender and that sort of makes a mistake and obviously he gets there. And then obviously with a guy like Kurti on the outside, you can cause some damage. But I think the big thing for the Box, though, is they're going to have to start a bit better.
Yes, that's been a topic of discussion. I just want to touch on one other thing about Moody. It's interesting that he has now to play outside center in this game, because if you go a horses for courses approach, you could have put some money on him starting on the right wing against Scotland, given the fact that a guy like Duan Funamadiwa will probably occupy the 11 jersey on the other side in terms of an aerial battle. But, I mean, I'm not suggesting for a moment that Cheslin Kolbe is not up to that challenge. I'm just making the point that a guy like Caden Moody does offer you the tall timber.
Well, I mean, Cheslin did basically cover him in the Lions tour as well. I don't think there's any worry about Cheslin's sort of abilities. I think what the Box have sort of done is obviously – Kanan's on in superb form at the moment, and he's really
grabbing. Yeah, he's very much the man with momentum. There's no doubt about that. So playing him again is probably not the worst thing. Let if the guy's in form, let him play. I mean, I suppose most coaches worth their salt will tell you that.
Yeah, no, no. Just looking at the other selections, I think interesting the back three, the same back three that was at Twickenham last time they played. With Kurt Lee and Marc Azoulay and Damian Willemse. So, yeah, I suppose they're looking a bit of that same sort of Twickenham magic where Kurt Lee sort of scorched England last year and hopefully get the same sort of space and sort of sidestep again on attack.
Mm. You're kind of reminding me of now that old saying about you being as only as good as your last game. And obviously they were outstanding in that one. But going into this game, they probably, all three of them, have a point to prove because of what the trio did, last week. The other guys who vacated those jerseys. So, they can't slip up in this one. They want to probably keep up the pressure and maintain the coach's interest in them, as potential starters against Scotland. So, but it's a fantastic trio. I mean, if they get going and play properly off each other, the All Blacks could have their hands full.
Yeah, and looking at that Welsh game, I don't know how much we take really out of that other than confidence and momentum. I don't think Wales put up much of a fight. I don't think we have to talk too much about that game. But, it was nice to see the Bok engine running, sort of in third gear, fourth gear, but not much of a, not much, I suppose, other than confidence, not much more than that.
It was a poor Wales team, let's be honest. But you can only play what's in front of you, and I thought the Bucks did that. They did that well. I mean, they didn't start that well, but they found the gears that they needed to late in the game, and they looked good. But I wouldn't read too much into that performance, apart from, as you say, a confidence booster.
The rest of the selections against Wales, I mean, I look at guy like Dwayne Vermeulen coming in. We spoke a little bit about that. I mean, Jasper Visser almost feels like he's sort of fallen a bit off the radar. In a game like the game against Wales, he didn't exactly sort of come to the fore. And we all know what he can be like when he's devastating. And it just feels like he's a bit off the mark there. And Dwayne's definitely the guy who can easily take the opportunity like he has all season and almost force his way back into that starting lineup against Scotland.
Yeah, the sort of the word in the camp earlier this year was that, a guy like Visser obviously has been groomed to take over from Dwayne, on a more permanent basis. And that has certainly been the case the last year or so. But I agree with you, Jasper didn't necessarily seize the moment against Wales, and he didn't really seize the moment against the All Blacks when he got a start there either. So, and if you then look at Dwayne's performances, I think he's been outstanding in the opportunities he's got. So, they may have a rethink where the idea might have been initially to have a Visser start and then Dwayne come off the bench in the second half. That may warrant a rethink. I wouldn't necessarily abandon that plan just yet, because I think Dwayne brings immense value in the second half when more experienced and cool and calm heads are needed to close out tight, tense matches. And I'd rather have him on the field then.
Yeah. My last point about this squad selection, probably just interesting to see another guy who can take his opportunity, Franco Mostert, Sos. And more than that, just the fact that the Boks have gone on the bomb squad bench with Jean Klein and Erkis Snyman. So it almost feels like they're playing them a bit as a combo more than individuals in the vying for position. And we probably see that a bit more at the World Cup. But yeah, a great opportunity for Franco Mostert. That number 5 jersey hasn't been locked down yet. And we could see a bit of Sos going for it there.
Absolutely. What we probably need to remember is that he was the regular number 5 for a while. In fact, started the last World Cup as the sort of incumbent number 5. They played the All Blacks, lost that game. And then Luit De Jager had one or two fantastic games. And Franco Mostert after that became part of the bomb squad. And I think he played after that tournament, the first 4 games against the All Blacks, all of them he came off the bench. And has sort of established himself as a key, integral member of the bomb squad. So it's interesting that he earns a start in this one. I'm a big fan of Mostert because I think he's a very wholehearted player. He empties the tank properly. You never get the impression that his work rate isn't where it's supposed to be. So you get good, honest endeavor from him. So I'm glad he gets a start to see, you know, what he can do from kickoff. And I think you're right. I think the virtues of a regular partnership, as we've seen with Jean Klein and Erkis Neyman, is something obviously the Bucks have invested in now. It's something that they probably want to use going forward.
Just on the makeup of that bomb squad, it's a strange one. I mean, the front row is the front row, and yeah, either one of those front rows can easily slot in into the starting role. That's not a problem. But this time around, they've gone for the two locks on the bench, only one loose forward, and obviously that's because they've got versatility on the field as well. Marco van Staden as it's an interesting bench combination. It's not one we've seen before, and also a bit of experimentation there to see how it works, the impact they bring in that second half.
Yeah, I suppose Erge does give you the option if you need him to play flank, he probably could do that. You could have a situation where a guy like, not necessarily that you want to do it, but you could play Mostert there in the second half and get one of the other locks on. So there are options. And there is, you're right, there is lots of versatility. So I think that is one thing. Versatility is actually a word that Rassie Erasmus used quite often, I remember, in some of the briefings earlier this year, because it's something he feels that a World Cup squad absolutely needs, because things never go 100% according to script, and you need to be able to roll with the punches and make decisions sort of on the hoof. And I think versatility gives you that option.
No, definitely. And then, of course, the elephant in the room, yeah, a certain goal kicker. The one everyone's talking about, the one everyone's carrying on about.
Look, I mean, yeah, to be honest with you, I think if we're going to go cliches, I'm going to say Stormer in a teacup. I think Mari Lebok is a fine goal kicker. I think he's one of the country's best. He happens to be going through a dip now. Most goal kickers, as we well know, go through a bit of a dip, and then ultimately they come out of it. He's going through one now, but if you were to judge Mari Lebok over the last two seasons, take into account URC last season, URC this season, even the bulk of his Bok tests, the man can kick. There's no doubt about that. And he's just going through a bit of a iffy patch. I think some of the angst is probably also generated by the fact that there's no sort of clear backup. So in other words, if he fails, then everybody goes like, okay, who's next kind of thing. So there is that pressure on him. But as I said, I mean, I have absolute faith in his ability to kick a goal. And I think he brings a lot to the Bok team in terms of attack. I think we've seen them grow an arm and leg in that department since the end of last year.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if you just have to look at the game against Wales, just two moments that there was the one try for Kanan Moody where he stopped his pass, went past the defender, I think it was Johnny Williams, and then sent the ball out there. Just the way he did that. And then the other one was his long pass to Damian Willemse, who ran a beautiful angle to beat the defense and score a try there. Those aren't things we've seen from Springbok Flowers a lot in the last 20 years. Those are the type of moments that we all want to see the Springboks doing, and he brings out those magic moments. Yeah, he's kicking the last two tests. His kicking has been at 56%. We obviously wanted to be around about 75-80% like most people, but the Boks are backing him, and the big question is who else? And I think that's been part of a bit of my irritation is that, you know, we spoke about it before in previous podcasts. About the conspiracy theories and the Andre Pollard thing, and yeah, there was a moment yesterday where Jacques Nienaber answered a question about would Andre be going back to his club after the All Black game, and he said his short answer, no, he is going back to his club, and we've given him the squad and nobody else, and then he went on for another minute and a half saying how wonderful Andre had trained. And yeah, I sat there and I thought to myself, a short answer is a short answer. And I mean, that's the way Jacques speaks. So, I mean, I don't want to criticize Jacques for that. But by talking so much about Andre over the last sort of week or two, they've almost sort of kept that fire going of that conspiracy theory. It's rather unfortunate. Because that, I think, as well, has placed extra pressure on Marnie. because there's all these people who think, well, when's Pollard coming back? And the truth of the matter is, if there's no injury, he's not going to be back, and Marnie's who you've got.
Exactly. And the fact is, if you look around the rest of the 33-man squad, he is the recognized goal kicker now. So, you know, but there's no point in moaning about it. Pollard wasn't fit at the time the call had to be made. The call was made, and he wasn't ready yet. And the Bucks now basically have to persevere. They have to back their own system. It's no point sort of dwelling on it now.
Yeah, and the 33-man squad, to just end the jock, said yesterday they've sent it through to World Rugby. It's finalised, and that's it. So, I mean, there's end of discussion on that one.
I saw a news outlet actually wrote a piece about the deadline looming and whether Pollard will be in. And I thought nothing has happened on that front to suggest that the man suddenly changed his mind.
Yeah, I know. It's been a frustrating one because we all get the same questions and we all receive the same headlines. And then, you sort of think, but what are they seeing that I'm not seeing? But that's where I'm going to leave that discussion because I get rather frustrated by that. And we don't have the time to delve into all of those things. We're gonna go quickly into a clip of Artie Sevier. He was chatting about the Springbok game and Artie being a great competitor. And just saying that no matter how friendly this game is set up to be, in front of 80,000 people at Twickenham, there's no ways this is a friendly.
Yeah, 100%. We've talked about there's no such threat as warm-up for us. Every time we put on that black jersey, every time we run out, we're trying to do the jersey proud, and I guess, do the legacy proud. So that's kind of out of our vocabulary at the moment. We want to go out there firing and banging. You know, they're big men and they're physical, and they'll be looking at that last test around the first 20, and they'll want to come out firing and nullify us. The way we started with Aussie, if we give that to South Africa, we're going to have a long day at the office. So, they pose a massive threat around their physicality, their threats around the breakdown. So we just got to, nail our structures, our game plan, and be ready and staying ready for things that don't go our way.
You're with Brendan Nell and Liam Delcom on the To The Last Drop podcast.
To be fair, Brendan, I'm not sure how many people used the word friendly. Didn't they use the word warm-up? Because I think the moment somebody uses the word friendly, you're going to get jumped on.
Yeah, no, I think warm-up's probably the wrong thing as well, especially if you get the context of what happened in Auckland. You'd hope that they'd be a lot warmer by the time they start the game. And, they can't have another. I think that's the big thing for the box. They went out, Andre Estes, and said in the press conference today, he said, we owe ourselves. We don't owe the All Blacks one. We owe ourselves one because of the way we started in Auckland. And I think that's pretty much the box mindset. It's going to be a hell of a clash. 80,000 people at Twickenham, neutral field. It's the team. And the worst part about it is it means nothing at the end of the day. It doesn't. The only thing you could.
There is a trophy at stake, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's all for the sponsors and all that stuff. But nobody really cares about the trophy. That's one thing about these things. Even in rugby championship and Tri Nations, the old days, we used to see the Freedom Cup and the Mandela Cup. And other than the first time they played for it, I don't think anybody. Have you ever seen one of those photos with them with the trophy again? Nobody. They take it for the sponsors.
Those trophies are somewhere in a cabinet, and it's gathering dust, and will disappear in the mists of time.
Yeah, I mean, nobody really cares who wins the Freedom Cup or the Mandela Cup or the whatever cup it is. I don't even know what this cup is, but that's as long as it makes the sponsors happy and they keep investing in the game, I suppose that's all that really matters there. It's going to be a massive game, we're into the final stretch, and then it's.
May I just add? I mean, I was thinking of this game and sort of the meaning of it, and it's supposed to be this warm up game, and people talking about that. Well, why would the All Blacks play the box, ahead of World Cup in their last game? And then I thought back to the 1999 third and fourth place playoff at the World Cup, where as those teams walked out and they did the anthems, you also got the sense of neither side really wants to be here. And the game was equally flat. I mean, there wasn't, look, I mean, I'm not suggesting for one moment the players held back, but it just didn't, it just lacked a proper sense of occasion. So there is a bit of, there is that sense that we sort of revisiting old territory.
Moving on to a different note, I was the other night at Monte Cassino for the South African Hall of Fame's function, inducting the 2007 World Cup squad into the Hall of Fame. It was quite a nice function, I must admit. A lot of the players, a lot of jokes going around about how some of those players still fit into their blazers 16 years on. Some of them still look extremely good. Some of them look a bit worse for wear. But it was a good function.
Names, Brendan.
No, I don't think we should go into too many names here. But it's not like we oil paintings ourselves. So but I think it was a good catch up and nice seeing all of those guys again. Some of the guys that I haven't seen for ages, like Wayne Judies, for instance. There was one that I didn't see for a long time, and it was a great function. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's also funny how you bump into ex-players sort of years after they've stopped playing, and then when they recognize you, the sort of welcome you get is almost overwhelming.
Yeah, and very much so that night as well. And you sort of think back of some of the ways they were quite hostile to us journos back when they were playing. Obviously in a good way, always. Well, most of them at least. There was quite enjoyed Jake White and his speech. So they had quite a funny quip. He said, most of the staff are here. Kurt Smalls, he said, Tutti, of course, Alistair could see us coaching Namibia. So he's on his way to the World Cup. Alistair's going to be like Eddie. He's going to keep on going to World Cups until he wins one. Which I thought was quite a good chip from Jake.
That's a very good chip, I have to say.
I caught up with Jake as well. So we're going to play you a clip of just asking him about, obviously playing in France and winning a World Cup in France and what it takes for the box now. And, this is what he said to me.
I think it's probably the one World Cup where underdogs can win certain big games, and that changes the whole complexity of the tournament. And that's the interesting thing. I think, to be fair, it is the toughest draw we've ever had. Because however we get there, it's highly unlikely Minnows are going to knock everyone out before we get to playing we're going to play someone big along the way. You know what I mean? We have to play Scotland and Ireland, but what I'm saying over above that, you're going to play France or New Zealand. And then you're probably going to have to play England, Australia, Argentina, and then you're probably going to have to play one of those other big guns again.
Yeah.
I can't see that once those big teams get to the end of the tournament, they'll get knocked out.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this. The one thing that I don't want to mention a name, but let me tell you what I've realized in the World Cup. You get Intermax out, and they're going to play Jelly Bear there, okay? When we lost John de Villiers and we put in Frans Steyn, look what Frans Steyn did. I mean, he won a World Cup, and he won another World Cup. So, if you look at all the teams around the world, there's someone that's going to be remembered for something. And the fact that, example, Louis de Jager doesn't go, or the fact that Pollard doesn't go, or the fact that, M doesn't go, who knows? Maybe that's the door that's going to open, for one player who's going to make a massive name for himself. And as you say, you asked me about a Springbok. I'm not sure who it'll be, but I'm almost sure that this World Cup is going to be someone that no one expects, because everyone's talking about that. I mean, who would have expected Frans Steyn to kick a 60-meter penalty in a World Cup final a year before the World Cup? So a lot of things are going to happen, and a lot of exciting things.
Yeah, that's typical Jake, isn't it? He always comes up with a bit of a pearler. But it's never a boring moment when you put a microphone in front of him. And you know what? He makes a good point. If you think also, I know he mentioned John de Villiers there, but if you think back to the 2011 World Cup, where a guy like Stephen Donald was far away and came and won them the World Cup. To be fair, it was only the one kick, but still, I mean, he won it. Dan Carter was injured. Colin Slade was injured. Aaron Cruden was injured. So, yeah. And look, I mean, also I have to say that game was, I think the French can feel a little hard done by.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I think Craig Hubert, who's now lives in New Zealand nowadays, of all things.
Wow.
Yeah, good man, Craig. We get along very well. We have lots of debates. But I think that game and in 2015 his game against Scotland were probably two of the games that he probably would least want to remember. That's all water under the bridge now. Talking about
easy for you to say.
I'm not Scottish or French, but just talking about teams with problems. If you'd rather want to be in Rossi's shoes or Jacques' shoes, then you'd want to be in Steve Borthwick's shoes at the moment, because they're in the news for all the wrong reasons, and we're not going to get into Owen Farrell. We spoke a lot about that, and the verdict is still, while we're recording this, is still pending. But Billy Vunipola on the weekend got a red card. They're having to answer all sorts of questions and not playing good rugby at the same time about things that when you'd rather be answering questions about your leading to the World Cup.
Yes, I find it quite stunning that England, since they won the 2003 World Cup, have either gone into a World Cup or at the World Cup found ways of shooting themselves in the foot. 2007, they were all over the place. They lost 36-0 to the Box in a pool game. Did very well to recover and get to the final. 2011, they had all kinds of problems. There was the dwarf tossing, there was the jumping of bridges, there was all kinds of things happening in that World Cup. They fell short, France knocked them out. 2015 at home, there was the ignominy of not making it through to the next round. And they didn't look that great until the latter stages of the last World Cup and did well to reach the final. And then, of course, they fell well short. So they do find ways of making it very difficult for themselves. But, that's thankfully it's not something for us to really worry about.
I think it's one of those things where each team's got their own problems. So we'll be eagerly watching what happens there and eagerly watching what Michael Checker does in that first week, because that should be rather entertaining. And we're getting closer and closer, and the excitement level is going. Some strange things happen, and we're going to leave you on this note. Dane Coles was asked, of course, we heard the news that Sir Steve Hansen, went and helped out Eddie Jones' Wallabies, which, it might sound like nothing in professional rugby.
Sorry to interrupt you, but is this the first time a sir is called Shaq?
I don't think it's the first time that a sir has Shaq, but we'll... we might have to cut that one out. But anyway, in normal rugby circles, any coach going to help another coach wouldn't be seen as anything, no matter where they're from. But in New Zealand, it's almost seen as a treason for him to do that. And there was quite an interesting reaction. The New Zealand media, when they spoke to Dane Coles, asked him if he knew about it and was the first thing, and he gave this, I think, the most honest reaction I've seen from a rugby player in a long time. So have a listen.
What do you make of your former coach linking up with the Wallabies?
Who's that?
Steve Hansen.
Yeah? Well, actually.
He has to turn up to the game.
A few days.
Might not be paid. What are your thoughts?
Shit, what are you up to? Oh, that hurts a little bit, to be fair. Yeah, mate. I'm actually, a bit speechless.
Does it sting a little, given what he's brought to the All Blacks?
Yeah, it does kind of bitter. He's a great man, and I suppose he can help out Eddie. Hopefully he doesn't tell Eddie all our secrets, but I think he'll be respectful, you know. Yeah, that's just me trying to process what you've just said.
And that's it. It's a huge week. We'll chat to you next week after the All Black game. I'm sure we'll have lots to talk about again. Maybe a few red cards, maybe a few interesting things. But, thanks for listening. Liam, it's been a good week. Let's hope. Can you give a quick prediction on the All Black game?
Oh, I was hoping you'd spare me that. I'm going to go with draw. I haven't actually thought of that. So I'm going to sit on the fence on this one. I'm going to go for a good old 22-all draw.
I think the All Blacks might shade it from where they are at the moment, but I don't think it matters either way. I think both sides are good enough to bounce back and show their worth, so I don't think it really matters.
They'll call it truce after 67 minutes with a score at 22-all.
Maybe not that way, but but we're going to certainly have lots to talk about. That's it for today. Thanks, guys, for listening. We'll chat to you next week, and enjoy the game.
Thanks for listening. And a reminder, you can find all the To The Last Drop podcasts on the Brendan Nell YouTube channel, iono.fm, Spotify, player.fm, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, and iTunes, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.